You ready? Okay. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. With that gavel, I have convened the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for February the 5th, 2018. First day of the special session. We are gathered today for the purpose of organizational meeting and an informational meeting. And I think the first order of business is to adopt rules, but I would turn to our professional staff for any comments you might make prior to commencement here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, you do have proposed rules in front of you. They are identical to the rules that were in place before. The only change is that they are for 2018.
Thank you. I would entertain a motion.
Madam Co-Chair, I move that we adopt the rules as presented.
Thank you. Co-Chair McLean has moved that we adopt the rules as presented. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objection? The rules are adopted. Thank you very much. Again, Ms. McHugh, we'll turn to you for the introduction of the informational meeting.
Okay. The first item on the informational meeting is a discussion with the Department of Administrative Services and Director Koba on assisting new or newly merged agencies. If you will recall, we had an audit. The Secretary of State conducted an audit on the Higher Education Coordinating Commission and found that there was violation of procurement rules, which largely came out of the fact that as they were a newly merged agency, they were very focused on their programmatic changes, and some things lapsed in their ability to actually comply with all the laws and procedures around administrative functions. So one of the discussion points was whether or not there's a role of DAS and how DAS would be able to assist new agencies or newly merged agencies with ensuring that administrative functions are compliant with laws and rules.
Thank you very much. With that, Ms. Koba, welcome. Would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Thank you. Katie Koba, Chief Operating Officer and Director of DAS. Good afternoon. We did receive the recommendations that the Legislative Fiscal Office had written up about the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission audit. And in essence, you know, really asking us if this was yet another opportunity for DAS to look at, you know, a checklist or rethink some of our processes when we have either new agencies created or existing agencies merge. And I think the short answer to that statement is absolutely. It's something that we do on a routine basis. And I think anytime we can take this opportunity to learn new ways to help agencies be successful, it's good for the executive branch and it's good for the legislative branch. A couple of comments that I might make just to call out, and many of you that have been here for a while would perhaps remember this. I remember way back when I started with the state of Oregon, and at that time, the Department of General Services was two separate agencies. We were the Executive Department, and the Department of Administrative Services was two separate agencies, the Executive Department and the Department of General Services. At that time, within the Executive Department, there was a division called Budget and Management, and that was a division that did what the Chief Financial Officer and his staff do today, which is the statewide budget process, putting the budget together and working with LFO on implementation. The management component of the Budget and Management Division did a lot of what we're touching on today, which is work with state agencies when they're in trouble or need a little extra assistance, or if we're standing up a new agency, they were kind of that management arm to help make sure that that worked properly. Over time, that function within the Budget and Management Division went away, and really through, you know, the transition and budget reductions. So today, when we have agencies that are struggling, DAS does step up. And typically what we have done is we have pulled with resources within the Department of Administrative Services to go out and perhaps handhold an agency or do some reviews. We have also pulled together teams of experts from within state government to do that work. And Madam Co-Chair, at 3 o'clock, you're gonna hear the work that DAS has been doing with the Department of Revenue as an example. A number of budget notes that were attached to the Department of Revenue's budget out of the last legislative session, and DAS has created a whole host of teams to come in one capacity or another and work with the Department of Revenue to kind of get them back on track. So that's not unusual for us. I think what is challenging is problems within agencies come to us in different ways. And I've been asked this question by our new chief of staff. How do you know when an agency might be getting into trouble? And I say, well, we just know. And he doesn't like that answer. So there are really a number of mechanisms that we use. An audit is a classic example of a mechanism that might say there could be an issue in this agency and you should look into it. Certainly working with LFO, we hear of any concerns that they may have. We have our offices within DAS, Chief Financial Office, which works on budget and certainly knows if a budget's going sideways, Chief Human Resources Office that works with HR advisors throughout state government. So there are a number of avenues that things come to us, and I can see the chair has a question.
I do, because I knew that the Department of Revenue had problems long time ago. And how did I know? The constituent calls went like that. And I don't know if you, both in terms of volume and ferocity, and I don't know if you have any cross-check mechanism with, say, the governor's ombudsman's office or governor's advocacy office to track how many calls come in, because you can, from a legislator's perspective, you can clearly track them by the number of cranky Oregonians that are calling their elected folks and
Madam
unhappy
Chair,
about something.
We do. We get a weekly report of the governor's office constituent calls, so we can kind of see what's going on. The latest hot topic is wolves, no surprise, as an example. We also hear from members, and I think Representative Smith was probably the first one that really was waving the flag on the number of constituent calls that he was getting with the Department of Revenue and saying, we need your help. And I know Legislative Fiscal Office staff were hearing it, and then we were pulled into those conversations. So there really are, it is just kind of that network of state government that things come to us one way or another.
Co-Chair McLean.
Madam Co-Chair, thank you. You started to say something that I thought we were going to follow up a little more on. When you gave us some vehicles or some tools that you can use, and you said that knowledge of issues come to you in different ways. Well, one of the things we were trying, I thought in our comments and in some of the comments that were made by LFO, that we were trying to talk about preventative means as well. And so best practices, checklists, really review by an administrative body like yourself that's looking to see if you've got two agencies involved and there's gaps between what one agency is doing and another. One that comes to my mind that I've been getting comments on and citizen input on happens to be right now between the marijuana crops and the hemp crops, and the difference between having to deal with the Department of Ag because hemp is an ag, you know, product, and having to deal with OLCC because you've got recreational marijuana. But somewhere that there is some kind of work being done or a possible system in place or possible, you know, best practices in place where you can actually get an agency to police themselves before there's a problem.
Madam Co-Chair, in terms of the example that you just gave with hemp and marijuana, which I know so well coming from my previous position, that would be more of a policy issue, and DAS doesn't necessarily get into the middle of those kinds of conversations. The governor's office has a policy person dealing with cannabis and has worked very closely with the agencies on those issues.
Well, can I push back on that for a minute? I agree with you that there are definitely, you know, 50%, maybe 60% that there's policy issues between those two. And, but there are also issues with how those citizens or those producers have to deal with two agencies that have some responsibility on how they function successfully or not, or how they're treated or not, or how they get services or not. And so what I'm talking about is preventative or best practices that help agencies who have combined responsibility for things after policy's been done. I'm not talking about before policy's been decided, but after. And they have been given a certain responsibility, but there's some gaps, or there's some different treatment, or there's different advice given by two different agencies over the same question and same purpose.
Madam Co-Chair, I think what we were focused on more today is more the nuts and bolts operations as opposed to the Department of Agriculture has a position on hemp versus OLCC on recreational. And what I would say is oftentimes the statutory direction to those two agencies can be different, mm-hmm. which is the case with hemp and cannabis or recreational marijuana. But I'm just wondering if we're really getting at what we had hoped to today.
Take away my example, because of course you were, you know, involved with the ag part. So just take away my example.
Okay.
Go back to my basic question.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that the challenge that we have is the uniqueness of every situation. So we have checklists on the finance side, as an example, when you're setting up your books and those kinds of things. Procurement is an interesting animal, which was the case in Higher Ed Coordinating Commission specifically because agencies have delegated procurement authority. And so there has been guidance given from the legislature to the executive branch in terms of delegating that procurement authority to agencies so they can take care of their own work. There is constant discussion around procurement and whether that should be delegated or not. And I can tell you that those discussions are going on right now. We do have training within the Department of Administrative Services that we provide to procurement experts within state government on how to do procurement and the right things to do and the wrong things. But we're not the one doing the day-to-day procurement for those agencies that have delegated authority.
Senator Wisnett. Representative Wisnett, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Director, can you give me my background from the military is we were always creating agencies, doing away with agencies, bringing new agencies in, merging agencies all the time. That was how we kept track or made sure that we covered up our inefficiencies. But can you give me some examples of a new agency we've created or merged, or have we ever eliminated an agency?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wisnett, I would indicate that is also a legislative function. Agencies are created and eliminated by statute or by legislation. In terms of a merger, this example with the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission is the most recent example that I'm familiar with, which was the merger of a couple of agencies. Prior to that time, there was actually a separation of an agency. Department of Human Services and OHA used to be one agency, and now they are two agencies. In terms of an agency that's been abolished, I think a while back the Board of Watchmakers was.
Yeah, some commissions or something like that.
But just in terms of, you know, way back when Senator Johnson, it was the old, what department of...
Picking me out as the
yes.
old one up
no,
here?
No, no, no. Department of Commerce, maybe, that they came in and did some major reorganization and ended up with DCBS and put pieces and parts in other agencies. But you don't see it that often within Oregon State government.
Follow up.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair. Director, thank you for that. But you said that the legislature is responsible for creating these agencies. I think some of that does come from the executive department as far as asking. Okay. And is your role to look and see, does that make sense? You know, if you create an agency, you're going to create more overhead. Every agency is going to have more overhead. You combine them, you're going to have less overhead. That's the assumption. So is your role to get involved in that at all and look and see where that makes sense?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wisnett, there hasn't been an agency merger since I've been in this position, which has been a relatively short time. So I think the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission was created maybe 3 years ago. Certainly when that happens, I don't think that DAS necessarily steps in terms of a policy analysis, whether that's a good idea or not, but DAS does step in terms of making sure the books are, once that merger happens, all the finance, particularly the financial pieces, are in the right places.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Since one of the major pieces of advice or oversight DAS looks at is financial, or how are you keeping the books? I'm going to take this opportunity then to ask about a couple of things that I still haven't been able to figure out lack of improvement over the years. Through budget management, it's important to keep track, of course, for legal as well as financial reasons of how the money is spent. You got to track it, what comes in, what goes out, and what's it being spent on. It's almost impossible to find easily how much is spent from a programmatic perspective on a certain activity, because apparently there are different ways of coding the data possible from one agency to another. When I've asked the question some years ago, what do we spend on mental health treatment? Mm-hmm. And in particular, another area, what do we spend on drug and alcohol addiction treatment? The answer was, oh, that'll be very hard to figure out. I said, well, certainly it's just a code. If you're doing drug and alcohol treatment, it doesn't matter which agency you're doing it in. You're doing that thing that it's in that program area. Apparently, it's not that simple. Are we making any progress to standardizing coding so that when the legislature wants to know what we're spending on a certain activity, we get the whole story through looking up one code or one set of mm-hmm. codes? So that would pertain to setting up a new agency or merging, or you're just trying to straighten out what exists.
So, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Nathanson, you've gotten at a level that I can't help you. If George Naughton was here, the Chief Financial Officer, he could certainly come up and talk about what I think I remember way back when as SCRs and things, the counting lines that agencies use. And I don't know, Brian, if you want to speak to this. Brian DeForest is here, who is DASA's Chief Administrative Officer, formerly the Deputy Chief Financial Officer, so he may be able to help answer that question.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Brian DeForest, Chief Administrative Officer for DAS. Representative Nathanson, to your question, yes, we do, especially when we're working with agencies that are either merging or separating, we want to recognize that the historic value of the transactions is maintained. The integrity of that data is maintained, whether it's combining into a single agency or splitting into multiple agencies. So we work very closely with the Legislative Fiscal Office to try to maintain the coding structure exactly as it is. And that if for some reason we have to deviate and create new codes, that we have a clear crosswalk between the historic data and the data on the go-forward basis. In the case of Higher Education Council, we would have looked at the individual coding structures of community colleges, of OSAC, and the other agencies that we're merging in together, and try to harmonize that data in a way that is both easily recognizable from historic perspective, but also a progressive look forward into the future as the agency and the administration of those programs continues to evolve.
Follow up. That's comforting in one regard, but in another, it could be just perpetuating a problem to the extent that something they may be involved in doesn't match up with the way it's coded in another agency that provides that similar service. So I'd like to follow up with you later and not take up more of the committee's time on that particular topic, but there's one other I'd like to put on the record. As you're working with agencies, what kind of mechanism do you set up to ensure that when they receive a grant from an outside source, usually it would be the federal government, but it could be money, some other kind of funds, other funds coming in. What mechanism do you set up to make sure that they have appropriate calendar flags so that if there are reporting times or start and finish times required for using the money, to drawing in that money and matching to the state's money, those are met. Are there any automated help devices that you provide to agencies to get points on their calendar? Just like we all have schedules that pop up and tell us you're due here in 15 minutes or your report on this is due in a week, Do agencies have that kind of assistance to make sure they don't miss deadlines?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Nathanson, so now you've moved beyond my technical abilities inside of the accounting systems. I will say that the SFMA does not have that type of capability of automatically flagging. I'm not sure which system might have it, although we do work with the grant coordinators within the agencies and encourage them to use all of the tools that are available to them from the federal government to make sure that they're monitoring the newsletters that are coming out and the bulletins that are coming out, and also use their own calendaring systems. Microsoft Office has a wonderful calendar. And when I have a task that I have a year or even 2 years out, I can flag that, and it reminds me, and it reminds me however many days I set it to remind me. And so we would encourage those types of tools. We did have a situation like that within Dogami, where they were not monitoring their federal grants on a regular basis. And in that case, it took some education, but also it took some turnover within their grant coordinator in order to really fix that system. And they now operate and utilize the federal grants much more efficiently than they used to. But it came through a lot of education.
Thank you.
I wasn't going to ask a question until you opened that door. My experience with Dogami is a little more sinister than what you just described. It was taking money out of a trust fund and reappropriating it for operations without authority. Now, my version of the story may be slightly hyperbolic, but it certainly differs dramatically from your rather benign rendition of what I think could have been illegal. And I was, Madam Director, a little dissatisfied with your answer to Representative McLean. We're looking for the prophylactic measures that keep agencies from messing up. We're not looking for the cleanup broom after the parade once there's a catastrophe. And I think that's the point. And for you to say, well, there are different policies between cannabis and marijuana. Okay, so it's still dissatisfied Oregonians who don't know what's going on and look out into agency land and say, I can't get a straight answer to a simple question. So two things in my question are, give us some comfort that there's some monitoring prior to the catastrophe, and help us know where you go to get reconciliation. And if the ombudspersons are getting 52 complaints a week, maybe that's indicative of the fact that there's a very severe problem and somebody ought to intervene sooner rather than later. Did I put too many words in your mouth?
No, she did pretty well for me there. Actually.
So even a blind pig finds an acorn. That's
Madam Co-Chair, you know, I think we could have we could refire up the debate, which has always been the debate around DAS, which is centralization versus decentralization, and how much control does DAS provide versus how much service does DAS provide. And in my tenure in state government, you have seen that pendulum swing back and forth. We all know the tension that exists between agencies and DAS, and we know the tension that you get when you talk about centralizing services and agencies having concerns about being able to meet their business needs when their part of delivering that service is taken away from them. So there's always that tension. I think, as a classic example, the state data center, where there was a bunch of tension when that was consolidated and agencies lost that function out of their own agency that went to the data center. So it provides a very interesting an enlightening conversation about really what is the role of DAS in a control position versus a service provider training education position.
Then I'll follow up my own question and respectfully suggest that might be some of the work for this committee, because it wasn't just the data center and the loss of control. It was the surprise to agencies that they were going to get more money ground out of their budgets for questionable service. And that then makes me think of the Department of Energy, where we entered into illegal agreements, where we squandered millions of dollars on programs with virtually no oversight. I think that those kinds of instances are the acid drip on people's confidence in government. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm looking for some assurance that maybe suggestions could be provided from DAS, not just it's an interesting debate. I'd like to hear what's the proffered solution so that we don't have these surprises along the way.
Madam Co-Chair, I hate to perhaps be so blunt, but we're not going to ever have a place where we avoid all problems in state government.
Thank you. This isn't my first rodeo.
Let's just be honest about that. And so I think that the challenge is, what are the systems that you put in place to try to prevent those issues, also recognizing the diversity of state agencies and the diversity of their clientele and the diversity of their need, how much is centralized, standardized versus how much is flexible and letting agencies, we hire directors to run their agencies and letting those directors run their agencies. So I guess I don't have, you do this, and you're gonna not have problems. I don't think that exists.
Senator Courtney.
Thank you. Co-Chair Johnson. So I don't do this work, so I don't understand anything that anybody's talking about, but could I just ask you some questions? So the very learned and high Teresa McCune, the community coordinator, started with an opening statement about an audit on the higher education coordinator. Is that correct? That she did, right?
That's correct.
And that's heck.
That's the higher.
And I really dislike heck, and I dislike all the things we did, but I voted for him because I got tired of people saying, Peter, you're stopping everything. So I don't know anything about the audit, but it leads me to be they're not doing things they're supposed to be doing. Is that correct? Okay.
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Courtney, the audit was focused on procurement.
That's a word I don't even understand.
Buying things.
Okay. So then they shifted to you. And I thought you were going to tell us about your meaningful relationship or lack thereof of heck. And then we've gone all over the place. So I just want to know, have you met with Ben Cannon personally and said, Ben, this is sloppy, you better straighten it up, and I give you 30 days. Have you had that? Could you just tell me, have you had that kind of dialogue?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Courtney, yes. And our procurement folks have met with their procurement folks and offered training and follow-up,
okay.
Yes.
One last thing, and do not give me this list. I don't want it. I couldn't stand it. It says here you're going to tell us about all the good things you do for new and newly merged agency who don't know what they're doing in whatever you do. Do you have a list somewhere of those agencies that you are holding their hands of right now because they don't know what they're doing? And I do not want you to give me the list today, and I don't want you to do a PhD dissertation to find it. I just would be curious, given what I hear you apparently were brought here today doing. Plus, I'm not trying to show off. I think I don't even have kindergarten questions. I have preschool questions. So could you do that for me, please, so I get a feel of what is going on here today, please?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Courtney, yes, we have a not written down list, but we have a list of agencies where we would be paying more attention to them than we would perhaps others.
Thank you very much. I have no further questions.
And before I go to Co-Chair McClain, while the Senate President may not want that list, there are others of us that would. Could you please provide it to the professional staff for distribution?
Madam Chair, I don't have a written down list. That was part of my answer. I don't have a written down list. I have a list of agencies in my head that we're making sure we're paying attention to.
Then let me ask you, could you write those down, please, and give them to the professional staff?
Maybe we can have a conversation later about that.
Co-Chair McClain.
Well, I really appreciate all your candor today, and I appreciate the comments that you made, you know, between policy and, you know, actually administrative. All of those make sense to me. But what I thought a couple of us were trying to get at today was that we really hope that we have some good services for all agencies to support them when they need support on either creating something new or taking something apart and unwinding it and making sure that we've got reasonable services for the public, for Oregonians. And I think at least what the co-chairs were saying today was that we honestly believe that besides your debate, put your debate aside, centralized, non-centralized, everything else, because that's fine. But there are still some missions that DAS has, from what I can read and see, that says we want you to help others do a good job, especially when there are preventative and or preparation or training, and you talked about training, that can be done by your organization that would help others do the kind of job that we expect out of all agencies at the state of Oregon level. So we're not here to debate it today. We're simply here to say that we think there's opportunity out there and that this committee is interested in seeing what's out there that we could do under any, you know, mission that, that your organization has now or ever had.
Madam Co-Chair, and that's what I tried to answer in my simple question at the very beginning. Yes, we do have that, and those are that's a level of support that we provide to agencies depending on the situation. Each situation is unique, and you need to come in and assess what's needed and what kind of support to give them.
So I'm going to just stop and think about everything you've said, and then I might have another question, but not today.
Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. You talked about assessments of agencies. How often do you do this sort of assessment? Is it when there's a new agency head? Is it when just something gets brought to your attention that, boy, there's a fire over here we might want to put out? Or what brings that on?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Thatcher, again, it can come from a number of different places. Oftentimes, it actually is from a budget note from the legislature, and so that's what's driven the work we're doing right now with the Department of Revenue was a whole host of budget notes and following up on those. Sometimes it can be that DOGAMI is an example where we know it's come to our attention there's an issue, and so we pull together a team of agency experts to go in. Sometimes they're actually embedded in the agency and working within the agency for a while, or sometimes they're just doing a review of agency processes. So again, I hate to keep repeating this, but each situation is a unique situation, and you basically have to do an assessment of that situation and then figure out the resources that are needed for the agency.
And I guess another follow-up. So there's some agencies that you said there's some you especially want to pay attention to, maybe hold their hand a little bit and get things through. And then there's agencies that you don't know yet that you need to be holding their hand. And we just don't know what they are yet because there's problems brewing, and perhaps the agency head says, yeah, we're fine. We're good. We're, you know, don't look at us. We're doing fine over here, but they're really not. So I'm wondering, is there a way to kind of head off some of these problems that could be brewing out there? You know, because you don't know what you don't know. How do you find out what you don't know?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Thatcher, I think that's the challenge that we have. You know, we have agencies that are separate state agencies. They have a director, they run. And so the role of DAS is how much are we in their business versus how much training, education, support we're here. If you have questions, come to us. If you need help, versus how much do you wait until something goes sideways and then you come jumping in. It's that whole gamut. Mm-hmm.
We focused very much today on the agencies themselves. I know that in previous administrations there was effort to try to focus on the commissions and what guidance is given to new commissioners. Mm-hmm. There are literally thousands of Oregonians that are willing to come forward and serve in a variety of boards and commissions, some controversial, some not so much. But it has been a wonderment to me about what level of training they get. There are public records. Sometimes those boards and commissions get very aggressive with the directors of the agencies, the semi-autonomous ones. And I'm just curious if you could comment, because I don't know to what degree HEC management versus HEC advisors ended up crosswise of procurement issues. If you could comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
Madam Co-Chair, my knowledge of the procurement issue with HEC, the commission was not involved in that. That was purely on the agency management side. The governor's Office of Executive Appointments, has developed an onboarding course training for all new board and commission members that is now mandatory. And that's just started within the last couple of years. And that is managed out of the governor's office.
Thank you. Representative, what's it? Wisnett, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Your mother used to call me all sorts of things worse than that.
Sorry.
I've spoken to you, I think, in the past, and this is something I've really worked on or advocated for, and it's probably not going to happen, of course, during my legislative career, but I still think we have too many agencies with contract responsibility. I think this should be minimized. I think DAS should be one, ODOT, and maybe that's all. Why are we going to train professional contracting people in each agency? Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we've interrupted you sufficiently that I don't know if you've completely lost the flow of your presentation.
That was it on my side of it. So I think it would help me for clarity. I mean, this was a pretty broad-based come and talk to us about X. If you want a follow-up conversation, perhaps a little more specific detail would be helpful.
Thank you. I think that we will have the opportunity to speak with the professional staff and see if there's further questions from the committee or the gavels to see if there's anything else we want to talk about. So with that, Ms. Koba, thank you very much. Colleagues, anything else before? Okay, thank you very much. All right, Ms. McHugh, if you would introduce the next topic.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So since the Joint Legislative Audit Committee has kind of gotten into a rhythm and had more meetings, the committee has tended to focus on performance audits that have been taking place. And one of the discussions that came out is, again, with the constitutional requirement to be the auditor of public accounts. Obviously, financial audits are a huge component of the work they do. And so the Secretary of State was asked to come forward and provide some overview on financial audits and then talk about a couple of the most recent as well as the comprehensive annual financial report to give some background to the committee.
Thank you very much. Welcome. And if you would introduce yourselves prior to giving testimony, that would be helpful. Thank you for joining us today.
Okay. Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Johnson and McLean and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Wenger, and I am a deputy director in the Secretary of State's Audits Division. With me today is Kelly Olson, and she's a financial auditor in the division, a financial audit manager, excuse me. Thank you for the opportunity to share about our financial audit staff. We've been here many times for performance, so it's kind of nice to see, to get this opportunity. I'm going to start by presenting an overview, then I'm going to turn it over to Kelly Olson and then to Julie Kennedy to share about what our annual statewide audit includes. There are also three financial audits that are included on today's agenda that we have incorporated into our presentation on a summary level. Our mission is to protect the public interest and improve Oregon government. We conduct our work in accordance with auditing standards, which require that we maintain independence in our work, exercise professional judgment, hire and train our staff to be highly competent, and take steps to assure the quality of our work. Audit standards require that audit staff be adequately trained and that they receive approximately 40 hours of continuing professional education each year. By statute, the Oregon Audits Division conducts audit work in compliance with generally accepted government auditing standards issued by the GAO, which is the Government Accountability Office.
May I interrupt and ask a clarifying question? The continuing education, is that provided to, say, CPAs or to other auditors? Is it unique to state government, your own sort of continuing audit education, or is this a product that's out in the public square for public auditors and other auditors of significant accounts?
Okay. Chair Johnson and members of the committee, it's a requirement for all audit staff that are following audit standards, so not just for the Secretary of State's Audits Division, but if you were in a CPA firm, you would also have to receive 80 hours of CPE every 2 years.
And does that also extend to internal auditors for agencies?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, they follow the what they call the Red Book, and they do have some CPE requirements. I'm not sure if it's 80 hours, but it may as well be. I don't know.
Thank you.
So these standards are developed for government auditors to ensure quality work is performed within the public interest. These audit standards contain requirements and guidance to assist auditors in acquiring and evaluating sufficient appropriate evidence, as well as reporting the results. In addition to the Yellow Book, financial and federal audits, and this is the Yellow Book, it actually is yellow, in accordance with the AICPA statements on auditing standards. I did not bring that book with me, but it's very voluminous, it's small print, and it has very prescriptive guidance on how you account for certain transactions. We also have to comply with requirements that are issued by the Office of Management and Budget. We thought it may be helpful to explain how financial audits differ from performance audits. Basically, the audit objectives are different. For financial audits, the objective is the same for every financial audit. We review the financial statements and the underlying accounting information to determine if they were prepared in accordance with accounting principles, which are those standards, for the accountants. We have to be very knowledgeable of these principles to ensure agencies properly accounted for, recorded, and reported transactions. When you were talking earlier about accounts, that's what we're looking at, detailed accounts. We provide assurance to the users of the financial statements as to whether the amounts can be relied upon. While the objective is the same for each financial audit, which is the reliability of financial information, for performance audits, the objectives vary from audit to audit and are related generally to program effectiveness and efficiency. The audits division is budgeted at 72 FTE, and of that amount, there's 34 financial audit staff.
Let me ask you, what are the objective standards for efficiency? I mean, how are you guided by written objective standards in any of the colored books, or how do you make a judgment about efficacy and efficiency?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I've participated on many performance audits, but I'm mainly a financial auditor. So as performance auditors, when they start audits, they will do a lot of background. They will look at other states. They will look at best practices. They try to find criteria. If it's for a specific program, what criteria is for that program of how it should operate. Then that's what they call the criteria. Then they do the condition, which is what's really going on at the agency. They compare the two, and then you have an effect, and you determine why do we have this effect? What's the cause of this effect? So they're looking for, if there's no criteria out there, they might look for comparative criteria, which would be looking at other states with similar programs.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
Okay. So we have 72 FTE, 34 financial audit positions. All financial auditors either have a business degree with concentration in accounting or a degree with several upper division accounting courses. Currently, we have 30 financial staff, which includes myself and four audit managers. Of the 30 staff, 56% or 17 are CPAs. And collectively, the five members of the financial management team have 120 years of audit experience. About 70% of the financial auditors spend their time conducting the single audit, which includes the financial audit of the state's financial statements and compliance audits of several federal programs. This work is performed to satisfy the legislature, the governor, the citizens, that the state's fiscal affairs are fairly presented. This work also fulfills the federal government's mandate to audit the more than $11 billion that the state of Oregon receives each year from the federal government. To annually audit the state's financial statements, which are included in Oregon's Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, which is referred to as the CAFR, we conduct financial audits at several state agencies. These audits provide assurance as to whether a state agency properly recorded and documented transactions, whether they follow accounting standards, in preparing and compiling the transactions, and whether the amounts presented in the financial records are complete and accurate. Annually, we also conduct several federal compliance audits. These audits evaluate whether state agencies comply with applicable federal requirements. Recommendations are directed at improving procedures and compliance with laws and regulations. These audits are mandated as part of receiving the federal funding. Over the last several years, we brought some of the books to share with you, but they're hard to read through, they're very detailed, and so over the last several years we've brainstormed ways to kind of better communicate that information. The result of that effort is the Keeping the State of Oregon Accountable Report, which we've issued annually for the past 5 years. This report provides background about the dollars received by the State of Oregon and the dollars spent, and it summarizes the results of our final financial and federal audit efforts. The fiscal year 17 summary report is expected to be released in May of 2018. In the past, we have presented that to JLAC, if you're interested. Again, that will be in May of 18. When staff are not busy working to complete the single audit, they conduct other financial audits mandated by law. They conduct risk assessments of smaller agencies, narrowly focused performance audits, municipal audit responsibilities, including desk and field reviews. They perform hotline responsibilities, the biennial financial condition report, and other related assignments that arise. Of the 33 reports, so you see this is some of the 33 reports up here, and we'll scroll through these. But this one, right, what you see up here are the reports that we issued as part of the fiscal year. This is a calendar year audit. So this will include some from 16 and 17. Okay, but this is what we would prepare for a CAFR. Okay, so the first one you see up there is the CAFR. We issue that. Generally, it has to be done by the end of the year. So the CAFR is usually always issued in December. And Department of Administrative Services compiles the CAFR, and we're auditing it, and it's issued in December. The second report is the lottery report, which you see up there. The lottery, their transactions are included within the CAFR. We audit it as part of auditing the CAFR. The third report up there is a single audit report. That is the report that the feds require, and it has all the federal expenditures, and it has our findings included in that report. The Keeping the State of Oregon Accountable, that's our summary report. The other reports up there are financial statement audits that we do as part of the CAFR audit. The last three that you'll see up there, those are our contracted audits that we conduct as part of performing the CAFR. So we contract out for PERS. PERS requires extensive expertise in investments. We used to do that audit, but we haven't done it for about 10 years because the investments are a lot different than they were 20 years ago. We contract out for the SAFE audit, and they have two audits there. They have a one in a GAAP audit and a SAP audit. One's for accounting principles and one's for insurance industry principles. We also contract out for the financial audit of the Common School Fund because the secretary is on the land board, so we are not able to audit those amounts. And if you want to flip to the next screen.
While you're switching screens, I would understand why with the Secretary of State, regardless of who it is sitting on the land board, that would be problematic for purposes of an audit. Does that devolve to a third party to do that work?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the way the standards, with the GAO, the standards, they give you guidelines for independence, and it's seen as a threat to independence. So with that, we contract out for that audit, and a firm has been doing that audit for a few years now. We used to do that audit as well, but when the standards, we get guidance from the GAO on what's acceptable, and that one has been contracted out as a result of that. So these audits you'll see here. So the first audits that were on the screen were audits to complete the CAFR. These are other audits that we completed in calendar year 2017. Some of these are mandated. The DCBS, the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange, that is a mandated audit. There is a statutory requirement to do a financial statement audit and a compliance audit. The OHA Safe Drinking Water is a mandated audit, as well as DEQ. The others are Treasury audits. They are with more Treasury-type instruments out there and different funds. Those have been within the last 5 years that we've started those audits at the request of the Treasury. The last one is the SELP audit. It's a mandated audit. Some of the audits that are up there, as well as the second one from Business Development, they receive bonds. And by statute, bond programs have financial audits of their statements as part of the bond program. This last year, we did the financial audit staff actually did the HEC performance audit. We consider it a narrowly scoped audit. It was on procurement. We tend to do narrowly scoped performance audits on types of fiscal controls, or it could be a federal compliance audit. The other reports that the financial audit staff are responsible for, we oversee the municipal audit program, and in 2015 there was legislation to create a summary report. That was the first summary report that we issued. The Columbia River Gorge Commission, we have an intergovernmental agreement with the state of Washington. We have to audit certain expenditures of that commission, so that's what that report represents. The state of Oregon financial condition, we've been doing that report for about 8 to 10 years, and it's just every 2 years we go through and we pull information from the CAFR, and we're doing a trend analysis of programs.
You may have said this already, and forgive me for asking a kind of dumb question. Let's go back up to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission procurement 2017-28.
Mm-hmm.
The 28 is?
Oh, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that we number our reports on our website, so it was issued during calendar year 2017, and it was our 28th report.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
And then the last report up there is our government waste hotline. By statute, we maintain a hotline, and we are to report the results of the hotline once a year. So that report usually comes out in May. So the three audits that we had in our agenda are conducted as part of the CAFR, as we saw, and the audit managers who oversee these projects, as well as Rob Hamilton from DAS, the Statewide Accounting and Reporting Services, they're here today. I'm going to turn it over to Kelly Olson for a minute to briefly just to share with you a little bit more about what goes into auditing the CAFR.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Olson. I'm an audit manager with the Secretary of State Audits Division. As Mary explained, every year we audit the state's financial statements. They call it the Comprehensive Annual Report, but you'll hear us refer to it as the CAFR for shorthand. The audit provides the state with our professional opinion about the completeness, accuracy, and validity of the statements and the state's accounting information. The financial auditors spend about half the year performing this audit. And the CAFR was released this year in December 27th. The Department of Administrative Services is responsible for the preparation of the state's financial statements. DAS compiles and reports the financial information of more than 100 state agencies. Throughout the year, DAS also provides training and guidance to agency staff, implements any new accounting standards for the state, performs a review of procedures of selected state agencies at year end, and makes any necessary accounting adjustments to the financial statements.
I'm the new guy on this committee, so forgive another pretty elementary question. It's been my experience that agency heads have the opportunity to look at a preliminary draft and at least this was a practice in the past, and take exception to findings or make additions, basically have the opportunity to edit the audit. And I'm just curious how much leeway in either a financial, probably less so there, and performance audit, how much leeway is allowed under accounting auditing standards for monkeying around, for lack of a better word, with the findings? It always struck me a little bit like touching up your own x-rays, and I'm just curious on the record if you could comment what degree of latitude is allowed to, I mean, I understand the opportunity to dispute material findings. There may be an error. That happens. But what are the proper tolerances for allowing material changes to an audit in draft?
Madam Chair, I don't think auditing standards specifically address that piece, but for the record, our perspective is we provide a draft of findings, financial and the performance report for agency management review. Part of it is to go through it then to make sure we are accurate, the information is accurate and reliable. And sometimes it's just about wording. But if we feel strongly that that is a finding and it is an issue, I wouldn't be changing the finding. But I do not want to be inaccurate in my finding.
Who's the final arbiter of whether or not a change in wording is made?
Madam Chair, the audit manager along with the deputy directors would make that decision.
And is there, if it's not a material fact, but it is just a dispute on tone, or is there any record kept that an audit has been changed in draft?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll speak a little bit about the performance. So for the performance, we have various drafts. We have what we call a working draft. We have a reference draft, and we have a final response draft. So the working draft...
You're going to identify those, I hope, what each one of those are.
A working draft, yes. So a working draft is, so let's just say for a recent report that went out, we'll just say for the HEC audit. So we have a working draft. We would send that to the agency. We would give them the opportunity to, we send them a translittle. We give them an opportunity to go through the report, and if there's any misunderstandings, if we interpreted something, if they have additional information they want to share, we have a finding. There's no, we did this. We will consider that. We meet with them to discuss the draft, and they will bring additional information or provide clarity, and we kind of go through. We take that into consideration and we decide, you know, yes, we should change this. And it could be for tone. Maybe the finding isn't worth that, you know, a strong language. We would go through that process. We would bring it back in, make the changes that we feel necessary, and then we would issue it out in a final response draft. At that time, we think it's pretty much near final release. There shouldn't be many changes after that. But what I tend to do, I was the interim director for about 16 months. Up until it's publicly released, if I see something, I will make a change. And I think in most cases, there aren't anything drastic that are happening the last time, but even if there was a grammar or something, until it's out. But for other reports that are more contentious, that you might have more feedback in, they may have a couple different meetings just to get the working draft through. They might meet with an agency. Let's say if you have an OHA audit, you might meet with an agency, make changes, and if there's so many, because there's so many different parties involved, they might have a couple different meetings, make certain changes, meet with them again, and discuss those changes before they issue the final response draft.
Are there instances where you as a manager would simply say no?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes. If we have, especially, well, for financial, even for performance, if this is how the story is, this is what the evidence shows, we're going with the evidence. And if the agency comes back on their response and disagrees, they'd have to provide evidence. And so in, I think, only two times in my career here, and I've been here about 28 years, we have rebutted because we disagreed. But we really try to get to a point where the agencies agree with the basic finding. They may have differences on how they want to implement it, but we really try to get to that agree because we want them to implement the recommendations. That's the
which raises one other question. What's the degree of rigor in the implementation? You say to XYZ agency, we need you to do the following three things. What's the degree of rigor in going back and checking that the three things were accomplished? Or if they weren't, why not? And who is the why not reported to? Because you can do audits until the cows come home, but if there's no enforcement on making the material changes recommended in the audit, what's the purpose?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for financial audits, which include the financial statement findings and federal findings, we are required by federal requirements to issue the single audit, and in that report, we have to get a corrective action plan from the agency on how they're going to implement that audit. We follow up every year with the status of the finding, what changes they've made, and we're required to do so by the federal government. If they have not made the changes, it goes into the report again, and the federal government's getting a little more feisty. They're holding the agencies more accountable and holding the reins on the money a little closer. So agencies are having to show improvement on those findings. For performance audits, it's been different over the years depending on what the recommendations are. What we're implementing now is a more robust recommendation follow-up program where for HEC, actually, we completed that audit in December. We are going to go do a follow-up most likely in April or May on the status of those findings. We're going to do it sooner, and typically we would wait and do it at 18 months. And we would wait on the agency to kind of self-report how they're doing with those findings. We're going to do a more robust follow-up and actually go back to the agency. Depending on the level of the findings, the nature of the recommendations, with HEC, we're thinking they should have those implemented within 3 to 4 months.
Is that all a closed loop between the Secretary of State's office and the agency, or is there the opportunity for a report out to, let's say, legislative fiscal, so that legislative fiscal could schedule legislative hearings to see how you're doing? And by the way, 18 months is a really long time. That's pretty generous.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what we plan to do is issue reports so they could come in front of this committee, the status of those reports. The 18 months came about because some of these findings require time to, the recommendations require time to implement. So when we started going back sooner, they hadn't had time to make any changes, especially if they pertain to the resources or whatnot. They could have a lot of them fixed, but some of them might take a little bit longer.
Ms. McHugh, do you?
I would just clarify, too, that now we, as we do, as you've asked staff to do a review of the audit, included in those are the recommendations going forward from the committee. We will be tracking those. We will be determining what happened with those. I would point out in a number of the performance audits, as the Secretary of State, as Mary mentioned, looks at best practices or what do other states do, a number of those recommendations can include significant funding suggestions on behalf of the legislature. And again, in context of a single program, more money would be good. We have kind of taken the stand of that's fine for our best practices, but ultimately those kinds of decisions have to be done through the Ways and Means process, taking into account all state follow-up. So some of the suggestions may not be kind of an immediate response, but maybe things back to the legislature for consideration.
Is there an opportunity to use this committee as sort of air traffic control to establish those boundaries? What occurs to me is that if the pilfering of a trust account for operations continues, I wouldn't want to give them 18 months to rectify that. That is, in my opinion, illegal behavior. And again, I say my opinion. But I would like to have this committee have the opportunity to perhaps set some different objectives for when a management letter recommendation or a material fact is disclosed, to maybe shorten that up in some instances.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think that's where we're headed right now with the current with the, or with our recommendation follow-up. It should be much less than 18 months, and even if it's just a status check-in to make sure that they're making progress. That's our goal.
Forgive some of my newbie questions. Okay, please continue.
Thank you. Part of our planning efforts for the CAFR include identifying the significant financial account within the state's billions of dollars of assets, liabilities, revenues, and expenses. When we identify those counts, we then determine which state agencies have the significant dollars. Our goal is to audit at least 70% of the dollars in each of those main categories. To audit the CAFR, we perform financial audit work at 27 state agencies. The list is up there. So a lot of them are the larger agencies because that who has the significant financial dollars. For financial audit accounts selected for testing, we perform various procedures to gather sufficient appropriate audit evidence to gain reasonable assurance that the accounts are materially correct. Some of the auditing procedures performed at each agency include inquiries of agency management and others to gain an understanding of the agency and its operations. We evaluate and understand their financial internal controls. We perform analytical procedures. We test selected documentation supporting account balances, and we at times will confirm account balances with third parties, say like debt balances.
I understand the 27, and I agree with you that those are the ones that the most money passes mm-hmm. through. Are there any other protocols, for example, a change of leadership in an agency, a director leaves for whatever reason? Are those automatically selected for some kind of a fiscal integrity audit as you're having a changing of personnel?
Madam Chair, anymore when a leadership changes, there's not a mandatory audit that is conducted. If we are aware of any issues, we may go in and conduct what we call a change of director review, but it is not required.
Good question.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it used to be required. About four biennium ago, I've been around a long time, so I know a lot of history. About four biennium ago, it was removed. And I think the reason it was removed because they didn't feel the need that it needed to be every time a director left that position. So now what we do is we go through our, it's actually one of the procedures we have. If there's been anything recent with the control environment at the agency around the director, then we will do what we call a change of director audit. We have one actually planned for this spring, but.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, please continue.
Okay, so after we've performed all of our audit procedures for any accounting errors identified, we will discuss the issue with agency management, propose audit adjustments to the financial statements. We will also communicate any improvements to internal controls to help ensure the accuracy of the financial information. Any significant internal control findings will be included in the statewide single audit report, which is published each March, along with the agency's corrective action plan / agency response. My colleague Julianne Kennedy will discuss the single audit report. I'm happy to answer any other questions there might be.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions?
I have a minor one.
Senator Thatcher.
I think it's minor anyway. I'm just trying to figure out what the method of the order.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there is no method.
Oh, okay. Just
as they
were
listed, the earlier ones were the bigger agencies.
I see.
That's why. Okay. Larger dollar amounts.
Representative Wishead.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I have to ask this. How frequently do you find abuse, waste, criminal activity in your audits?
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, so we have a government waste hotline. And citizens or state employees can contact that hotline if they have fraud, waste, or abuse. To be honest with you, I don't know if we've ever had fraud, waste, or abuse through the hotline. We've had a couple where we have done some reports in the past, but I don't know if they necessarily came through the hotline. When we're doing our financial audits, if we become aware of something that might allude to that, then we will notify our fraud investigative team, our hotline team.
Madam Co-Chair.
Follow up, please.
Thank you. The recent press report about Betsy with the gentleman that was using a broker to sell the energy credits.
Can we define what Betsy is? Some of us are a little sensitive
yes,
about
ma'am,
that.
I understand. The business energy tax program.
Thank you.
Not our good coach here. Did you find anything in your last audit from Department of Energy that identified that this was occurring?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, so for the financial audits, the amounts there aren't material enough, so we don't audit them as much as part of our CAFR audit. We do a SELP audit, which is very narrowly focused on the SELP Small Energy Loan Program bonds. Okay, we do that annually. I know probably 8 to 10 years ago we did an energy audit, and that came up, and it was focused on personnel. And then in 2015, we contracted out, and we had a firm come in, and actually, when all the Betsy stuff was in the newspaper, contracted with the firm to actually do an investigation. What they found in that case is they had a lot of red flags, and a lot of those incidences were the statute of limitations was over, and they received a lot of credits. But my understanding is based on their report, that the legislation was very open, so a lot of these were allowable. But yeah, I'm not sure if I am answering your question or not.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
If no other questions, then we'll bring Julie Kennedy up for a little bit about federal.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Good afternoon, Ms. Kennedy.
Good afternoon. Co-chairs and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Julie Kennedy, and I'm a financial audit manager with the Secretary of State. I'm going to present a general overview of our audit responsibilities related to the federal programs. Oregon receives over $11 billion in federal tax dollars annually through grant agreements with federal agencies. And these funds are for administering federal programs in Oregon that range from improving infrastructure to public health and safety. Our largest source of funding comes from the Department of Health and Human Services and the Departments of Agriculture, Labor, Transportation, and Education. This chart shows the state agencies that receive those funds, just the largest state agencies. You can see that OHA and the Department of Human Services receives the bulk of it through the Federal Department of Human Services and the Department of Agriculture mainly. To continue receiving funding for these programs, Oregon has to have an annual audit performed by certified and independent auditors. And the audit's required by the Single Audit Act, so it's commonly referred to as the Single Audit. And its purpose is to determine whether state agencies are complying with the program requirements. And just a side note, the Single Audit Act, the way it got its name is that the federal agencies were responsible for conducting their own program audits. So an entity receiving a lot of grants from several federal agencies would have to submit to several audits in a given period. And these aren't just states. These can be counties and cities and not-for-profits as well. What the Single Audit Act did was it placed the focus on the entity, so instead of several audits, they now have one audit that covers all the programs that they receive grants for. The Office of Management and Budget developed nationwide policy for how they want the federal compliance audits to be performed. They provide strict instructions on how we're to determine which programs to audit. And through the OMB's compliance supplement, which is a document they update annually, they provide the specific audit procedures we're to perform for each federal program covered. The OMB requires every state to submit a single audit report electronically to the Federal Audit Clearinghouse by March 31st of each year. I say every state, but also the cities, counties, and not-for-profits that receive over $750,000 in federal funds also have to submit these audits. The Department of Administrative Services prepares the single audit report, which includes our professional opinion on the state's compliance with federal requirements. I have copies of last year's single audit report. I don't know if you would like to have it.
Yes, please.
As I outline a little bit about what is in the report, I can read off page numbers in case you want to thumb through.
Thank you.
So pages 1 through 6 have our professional opinion on the state's compliance with federal requirements.
5 through 6.
Pages 7 and 8 show a summary of our audit results. And this is all prescribed by the OMB, how we put the report together. Any findings from our CAFR audit, the financial statement audit that Kelly was presenting, are shown on pages 9 through 25. And findings from our federal compliance program audits are on pages 27 through 55. The findings include responses from agency management about whether they agree with the findings and what actions they plan to take to correct the underlying issues. The report also includes a schedule of all federal funds spent by the state for the year, and that's on pages 58 through 80.
May I stop you and ask a question? Yes. Is this work underway right now? I'm just skimming it. Obviously, having just been handed this document, I'm seeing, recommendation and then status. Partial corrective action was taken. The agency response is as follows. I just happened to pick page 91. And again, I'm skimming. Is it your responsibility as the manager to bird dog, for lack of a better word, progress on this? How do you keep track of what tasks are completed or what management steps have been taken to rectify an identified problem?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, we are required to follow up on the findings every year, and we are currently conducting the single audit for fiscal year 2017, which we will submit to the Federal Audit Clearinghouse in March, the end of March. As we're conducting our current year audit, we're asking the agencies for their progress on the prior year findings, and we do some procedures to ensure that we can agree with the status and the progress that they list, and then that goes into the single audit as well. And that's pages 83 to 115 show the prior 2 years of findings and the progress on those.
And then one more question. I'm looking at one now, and again, I've just picked random pages. The recommendation, develop a management plan to do these certain things, and then it says status, corrective action was taken. Is there any effort to make sure that they don't fall back into bad behavior again? Or is this a snapshot in time that just says there was an issue, it was fixed, and we're done, and the door is closed? Or do you guys come back and say maybe this is a systemic problem and you just happened to catch them and they fixed it in the short time, but now they're back to doing it incorrectly? Does it continue, the oversight?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, that can happen where a finding is corrected in 1 year and then subsequent years we might find that it's a problem again. But we continue to follow up on the findings until they're resolved as required by the federal government.
Okay. C- because some of these must be huge. Again, I've just randomly turned to a page, having not studied this document at all. And it is finding 2015-015, strengthen controls to ensure provider eligibility documentation is maintained. Then there's a recommendation. Then it says status, corrective action was taken. And again, I haven't studied this, but it seems to me, if this is a date of 2015, we had the same problem again in 2017 to a huge financial detriment of the state. And I'm just trying to figure out, if corrective action was taken, how did we slide back into a situation where we blew it again?
Madam Co-Chair, the audits are conducted based on the federal program. So it may or may not be the same program that's having the issue that you're describing.
Okay, and that's one of the dangers of doing what I'm doing, is just picking particular paragraphs. But that one just leapt out at me, given the recent headlines in the press and on the TV about our inability to ensure eligibility requirements.
That's fair.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
So as you noted, the status of the findings in the prior years could say corrected. They might say partially corrected, or they may say no action taken. Those findings would continue until they're corrected, or until the federal government tells us that this is no longer an issue. And that's an important point, because it's the federal agency that has the grant award with the state. It's their responsibility to take action against the agency for the findings that we find. It's our responsibility to perform the audits the way the federal agency wants us to perform them, and to report the findings to them.
Are you the negotiators if there is a fine? I'm going back in time and remembering MUPL. I believe that that was the Medicaid upper payment limit, and we tried something and it didn't work out the way that the federal government liked it, and I recall we had a huge fine, and I don't know whether or not that was negotiated down from a huger fine. Do you take responsibility for that phase of the interaction, or does that then revert back to the agency to get right with the federal government?
Madam Co-Chair, that reverts to the agency. We can't get involved in that, or we would lose our independence.
Thank you. Thank you. That's obvious. Thank you. I apologize for such a dumb question. Please continue.
The actions that the federal agency might take is they could require reimbursement for costs that were found to be unallowable. They could withhold future funds from that program until the agency makes the corrections, or they could impose further requirements. We are currently auditing 12 federal programs at 7 agencies for fiscal year 2017. These audits cover close to 70% of the $11 billion in federal funds expended by the state.
I have one question.
Madam Co-Chair.
Well, as I'm thinking about what you just said there, that last statement, my understanding is that this never ends. It's a rolling process. That there's this rolling process with the federal government. I mean, you have to have a report, you have to use a certain criteria, and you have a specific time frame to cover. So all of that is, but it's still an ongoing process. It never stops. I mean, there's not like you don't stop for 2 months and then you start up again. It's an ongoing process because, for the example that the co-chair mentioned, the qualification criteria, people are changing their status at all times because they're getting jobs, you know, not getting jobs. The spouse may have a job. There may be a child that gets older and doesn't qualify anymore. But I mean, it's an ongoing process to qualify and not qualify because of changing circumstance. So I mean, this is not we're done now for 2 months or 5 months or a year. It's an ongoing process of continual change of relationship between the federal government and the program and or the agency. Is that correct or not?
Madam Co-Chair, that is a pretty good description of how the programs are run. When it comes to our responsibility, we conduct an annual audit. So we were looking at July 1st of the year that we're auditing through June 30th. And so we'll take a sample for perhaps eligibility, and we will look at the supporting documents for that sample and determine whether that was properly determined on that basis. So then if we see issues, then we would write a finding, and then it would be up to the agency and the federal agency to get together and figure out what needs to be done to resolve that. This slide shows the programs that we're currently auditing and the agencies and the amount in federal dollars. Our federal audit season is typically from November to March. We assign teams to federal programs right after they complete their work for Oregon's financial statement, the CAFR. The number of hours an audit takes from the planning phase to the reporting phase has to do with the complexity of the program, the number of requirements the federal agency wants us to audit, the condition of the agency's controls, and any issues we encounter when gathering data or obtaining answers to our questions. However, regardless of the size of the audit, the deadline remains the same, March 31st. So we maximize our resources by shifting staff to the larger programs as soon as the smaller programs are completed. And we work in concert with the Department of Administrative Services to ensure that all parts of the report are completed and submitted on time. And as mentioned, we also perform follow-up on findings that are left unresolved from prior years, and we report on the status of those findings in the single audit report. I have.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions? Because I have not done a very good job of time management, we're now down to these three overview of financial audits, process and requirements, and discussion of recently completed financial audits. Do you have any comments on any of the three that are listed on our agenda? Lottery, public employees retirement system, a comprehensive annual financial report, or any of the other statewide?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we kind of encompassed those during our presentation. The CAFR is the first one that was on today's agenda. The Oregon State Lottery, we audit that as part of the CAFR. It has its own column within the CAFR. So that's a financial statement audit that we audit. And PERS, we don't have a whole lot to say. We contract out for that audit. We have a contract manager who monitors the contract. We let the contract, and they monitor the progress of the contract, and that we get the deliverables that we have contracted for.
How is that contract done? Is it based on qualifications or on price or both?
It's based on both. We do the put an RFP out there, and it's a competitive bid process.
Follow up to that.
Representative.
Do you negotiate that every 2 years, 3 years, so you're not the same auditor doing it?
You know, it varies, Madam Chair, members of the committee, it depends on the type of audit it is. Generally, the way the RFPs are written, it could be up to 10 years.
Ow, what's up?
Just depends on it. Now, just so you know, for the PERS audit and a lot of audits that involve complexities like SAFE, which is a very specific industry, and when you have actuaries, you don't have as many firms bidding on those. The same with PERS. You have to have, I think we just rebid or we are bidding out.
It'll
be new for fiscal year 18. And with that, it's very few firms, even local firms. The firms we have currently is MGO out of Sacramento. They have to know alternative investments. They need to know detailed specifics, and they have to have certain quality qualifications for auditing a retirement system. So,
are you convinced that with contracts of that duration, you're maintaining their independence?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, at this time we are, but if we feel at one point we are not, then we would rebid it.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much for your presentations, but moreover, your patience in being interrupted over and over again, largely by me. So with apologies, thank you for a very nice presentation. Ms. McHugh, before we wrap up, we kind of gallop to the finish here.
Nothing to add?
Okay, colleagues, any questions? Anything for the good of the order? Then I declare us adjourned. Thank you.